The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer several listener emails, try to get caught up a little bit. We've had quite a few emails come in over the past few weeks. I have no idea the topics, or I'd give you a heads up.
And, well, you know,
Senior Jim is the only one
who
knows the topics.
We're also going to be doing the Form 8606.
And at the end,
and
right,
perhaps
Justin's going to come in, and we're going to talk about some exciting IRS forms as we move into tax season here. The Form 8606, which is a relevant form whenever you're dealing with your IRA, transactions with your IRA.
But we're going to talk about it in the context of the backdoor Roth conversion. We've talked about that repeatedly on the show, but we never told people, what do you actually have to file with your taxes when you do the backdoor Roth conversion?
It's actually a backdoor Roth contribution.
Roth contribution.
A little nitpicky on you there.
Yeah, that's nitpicky. Yeah, that's perfect. I stand corrected.
It's a way to contribute through the back door.
Right.
Using the conversion process as the mechanism.
Right. So Justin is going to talk about the Form 8606 that one must complete, and the two sections of the 8606. You may only have to complete one section, not all two. When do you complete one? When do you complete two? When doing the backdoor contribution to a Roth is what we call it. And Justin's going to add some clarity on that. And Chris will explain in that segment exactly what the backdoor Roth is and how it works and things of that
nature. So brand new listeners who are listening to this now are thinking, what kind of bizarro podcast / radio show is this that they're going to talk about IRS forms? That just like is the most exciting intro we've probably ever had on the show.
I wish I would be here to do it because I could turn that into an entire show and make it fun and entertaining because no one ever talks about the forms you actually have to file to do the backdoor Roth. Everybody just tells you, well, you can't have any existing IRA. You have to earn over the contribution limits for a Roth, and you put the money in a non-deductible IRA. You wait a reasonable period of time and convert it to a Roth IRA, and voila, you get money into a Roth IRA when you weren't allowed to. So everybody talks about that, but never tells you what happens after that when you actually do your taxes to do that correctly. And that's what we're going to talk about in the
Excellent.
Second half of the show.
Well, I'm on pins and needles, but I wasn't sure others would be.
Well, you would be. Well, you're going to be there talking about it, so you shouldn't be on pins and needles.
Well, that means I'm excited for it. That means I'm looking forward to it. It's thrilling. I'm at the edge of my seat.
All right. Well, I hope you
enjoy. I'm salivating over the thought of possibly talking about Form 8606.
As long as you and Justin don't muff it up, I think you'll do fine. And for those who don't know, yours truly will not be in on the second half of the show because I have to be at another event that caused a little consternation in the office with Chris.
I'm not consternated. But
because it is Valentine's Day. We're recording this on Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. It is going to play this coming Saturday live for the first time on the 18th of February here in Northern Colorado. Our iTunians will be able to listen to this perhaps as early as the afternoon of the 18th or sometime around the 20th, 21st. It all depends when compliance gets this back to us and Julia can get it back onto iTunes. So we're recording this on Valentine's Day. It's actually about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Valentine's Day. Chris is married with 6 kids and has apparently Valentine's evening plans, but yours truly is not married, but he is single, and he is going to the 4th annual anti-Valentine's Day single sortie. And I need to get down into the Denver area by 6 o'clock, so I got to leave early.
Is this really just a cover for desperate singles to find someone to hang out with on Valentine's Day?
Oh, absolutely. We all go out and we tell everyone how happy we are.
Oh. Nice.
Being single and alone on Valentine's Day.
It's a boat full of denial is what you're saying.
it is going to be a room full of denial. That is for sure. But I just looked at the latest count, and 109 people have signed up.
Wow.
So usually we...
Is it a split between
men and women?
Or
it's probably very close to an equal split, yes. I would have to say that.
So when the dances start, there's a lot of partners to...
I don't dance. So from 6 to 8:30 is the mingle hour, which is actually a mingle 2.5 hour time period, of low-priced drinks, they said, and cheap drinks from 4 to 7, $1.99 wells, $4.99 pitchers. I'm not going to buy a pitcher, or a buck and a half domestic drafts. I'll
what is
stick
this, at
to
a bowling
those.
Alley?
Pretty much. It's at a dive bar in Golden.
Is it?
So any chance to go to Golden. In fact, they're warning you, don't dress up, wear jeans, because if you dress up anything beyond jeans, you're overdressed for this place. So I will be in jeans. And at 8:30, a DJ comes in, and then my friend and I will probably cut out at 8:30.
Whoa,
We don't dance.
I thought it was a singles thing.
It is. It's a male friend. He's also single.
Oh, okay.
I got a couple of friends outside of the office.
Well, I understand. I just it sounded like you were showing up with a date.
No, I'm not
going to
bring a date to a singles event.
Yeah, I know.
You go there to meet women, not to bring a woman with you.
That's the way I envisioned it, but it sounded a little different when you described it.
But so anyways, I have to go. I actually could work all day if it wasn't such crappy traffic to go from Northern Colorado to Denver. That's just terrible at rush hour. And that's, of course, the event starts at 6. Mm. So it's just knee deep in rush hour. Now, granted, even though it's Golden, it's really more on the Golden Lakewood line. Mm. So I still got to go through all that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a pain.
That's a mess.
Okay. So anyways, that's what
a helicopter.
I know. That's what I will be doing. Chris mm-hmm. will be taking his lovely wife out. You didn't take her out
no.
tonight? No.
No, we're remember you mentioned the whole 6 kids part
yeah.
as that story? There's too many kid functions going this evening, so we have to delay any sort of Valentine's celebration.
Well, that's good for you. You don't have to pay the overpriced Valentine's Day dinner expense.
True. I had to pay the overpriced Valentine's flower expense. That one you can't escape.
Well, Andrew at lunchtime said, hey, he ate his pizza really quickly. He says, I got to go. And I says, where are you going? He says, oh, because he's dating. He's not married, but he might as well be married.
There's a huge obligation there.
And he says, I got to go get some chocolates for tonight. I told him, I says, Andrew, another 12 hours, they're half off. Just wait. Tell her you'll give her twice as much chocolate. And he thought about it for a split second or two, and he realized...
I'm glad he came to his senses.
I can't do that, because I would have done that. I would have given her like an IOU.
Thus, the gym is single.
but don't they understand just waiting another 12...
No. It means that they're only worth half as much as a girl who got it on Valentine's Day.
I don't understand the finance of relationships.
You shouldn't diminish their worth by buying their candy at a discount.
Well,
you want them to become prudent after you marry them, but once the dating, I mean, that's an unreasonable expectation in my mind.
During the dating phase?
During the dating phase, certainly. Okay. Once they're married, then you should form a pact of frugalness that you do exactly that. And you go, maybe even as a couple, that's your Valentine's deal. The day after, you go and load up on Valentine's Day swag.
Well, I buy the chocolate hearts for everyone in the office.
And I enjoy those through the spring.
And I get them at half off. Actually, now I've learned, if you even wait past the 50% off sale, which will begin tomorrow, mm-hmm. you just wait another 7 to 10 days, 75% off.
Yeah, but then it's the kind of the bad stuff.
Ah, it doesn't matter, 75% off. So it didn't seem to slow you, Justin, or Andrew down last year. Those... We would open up a heart box and put it on the front counter. You know, when you walk in, there's the reception area.
I never ate any of the, I never got any of those.
Oh, you're nuts. You eat more candy here than anybody.
Not out of the heart boxes, though.
Well, then
I eat the bags of Halloween candy.
Well, you miss out. Look for the okay, heart
I'll
boxes.
I'll watch for the heart. Those are a terrible deal, by the way, even at half off. They've got them all spaced and the little separators in there. What you want is a bag that's mostly chocolate and hardly any air or packing material. That's what you need to get, is those bags of like the Dove chocolates or something.
Yeah, but I like the heart-shaped boxes because it's always something different. They got all these different...
But half of them are terrible.
Well, they didn't seem to slow everyone down because those heart boxes wouldn't last very long.
Okay,
so anyways, that's us of why I will not be here in the second half of the show when we do the exciting 8606. But... please talk about, like I said, explain what the back door is, and then Justin can get into the 606. And he all came up with this because he was showing me, he's you know, we're doing tax returns now. Justin is getting his enrolled agent designation. We're going to be bringing on advanced tax planning for our clients. We've actually started doing that, but I've limited him to 30 tax preparation clients this year. And he has, I think, 9 more to go before he hits 30, so he's doing quite well. And he started doing a few tax returns yesterday, and he found an error already in someone's 8606. So he was looking through previous tax returns going back to 2014, and he realized these people were doing the back door, but the tax preparer they were using was not doing the 8606 correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, that is perfect for tomorrow. He said, what's tomorrow? I said, you will be on the radio show. So see, I gave him a whole 24-hour notice. Much more than I'm giving you today.
For sure.
Because you can see my...
We're deep into the show. I still don't know what the emails are about.
Well, I'm just positioning the iPad correctly
to hold
now.
Your paper.
My printed emails are leaning against my iPad, and I will get to question one.
Mm-hmm. From West Virginia?
No idea why. They don't have any address in here.
Oh, maybe we can assume.
We're not going to assume.
Okay.
I generally reach out to everyone who emails and let them know when I answered the question and when to listen.
Okay.
So when I email them to tell them we're answering it today, which will play on Saturday, I'll ask them what state they're in.
Okay. But by the way, those of you listening, that just while you're listening to the podcast, you just have this urge to phone and speak to us. We are going to enable that technology, not speak to us at any point in time, but speak to us live while we're recording this. We will, instead of recording it and playing later, we will play it live as we're recording, enabling people from all over the world, probably not real helpful for those outside of the United States, but all over the United States to phone us and ask us questions live during the taping of the show. And that technology is coming in the next few weeks.
We're looking forward to that. It's going to be a new... You'll see some big changes to our podcast, the Retirement and IRA Show podcast. And one of them will be utilizing something called Facebook Live. Don't ask me what that is because I don't even know how to get on Facebook. But utilizing something called Facebook Live, we will broadcast the actual recording live. People will be able to call, ask us questions, hear their answers, just like when we go live on KFKA on some Saturdays. And then that same podcast will play again that Saturday on iTunes and be available for download. But it gives people the opportunity who don't want to send us just an email, would like more of a rap session with us, mm-hmm. and get their questions answered while they can actually talk to us, mm-hmm. The opportunity to do that. So we're interested in this. We're working on it all. We have to not only get all the technology items in this office, we have to get everything set with compliance, make sure they're copacetic with everything, and pull it all together. But I envision this happening within the next few months. So it'll be a big change on the Retirement and IRA Show. Okay, so I don't know where this emailer is from. This email came in Monday, January 30th, so it's not too far behind, a couple of weeks behind. Very short email, very pithy and to the point. Thank you both for the laughs and learning. I think she meant you.
The learning part?
No, the laughing part. Because you.
I do laugh at you quite a lot.
No, that's not quite what I meant.
Oh.
Okay, thank you both for the laughs and learning. I helped my mother, who is 82, figure out the amount she can convert from her IRA to a Roth IRA every year without owing any federal or state taxes.
Nice.
Do any of the five-year rules apply to her? And as I read this email, he put in parentheses what state he's in for the state taxes. And West Virginia is not it. I have bad news for you. It's one of our three most common states.
California?
Yep.
Yeah. That's okay. We like California.
California, Illinois,
hopefully
or New
not
Jersey.
Flooding from the dam breaking. But
if they are, I don't think they're wondering about their IRAs.
Probably not.
But those three states seem to get the lion's share. So I'm assuming this is a Californian as well. So do the five-year rules apply to this gentleman's mother? No, they do not. Possibly. Let's just say there are 2 5-year rules. One, to take a qualified distribution from a Roth IRA. A qualified distribution is a 100% tax-free distribution from a Roth IRA. How do you get that? Number one, your Roth IRA must be at least 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. And that's, well, I don't want to rain on your parade. That's probably the only one that could apply
here. Exactly.
But, yeah.
So that is the only one that I was, as Chris just said, that would apply in this case. And I'm going to assume it doesn't apply because it sounds like they've been doing it for a while. Mm-hmm. And the woman is 82. I have to assume she did not start a Roth IRA at 78, but it's possible she did. So the first 5-year rule is how old a Roth must be. And actually, let me change that. It's not how old a Roth must be. It's how long you, as a taxpayer, must have been participating in a Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. You need not put money in a Roth every year for 5 years to satisfy the first 5-year rule.
Nope.
You simply have to open a Roth, wait 5 years, and now you have a Roth that's at least 5 years old,
right,
whether you put money in or not. Mm-hmm. And then once you have one Roth that's 5 years old, it applies to all Roths. So this woman who is 82, maybe her and her son started doing this when she was 80. But she happened to have a Roth IRA that's already 12 years old. I'm just mm-hmm. making this up.
Mm-hmm.
So her brand new Roth is already assumed to be 5 years old because
right.
she has been in the Roth program for 5 years.
So the only way that this particular 5-year rule would apply to her at 82 is if she opened her first Roth ever in her lifetime within the last 5 years. That's the only way this would apply. If it's been more than 5 years since any Roth of hers has been opened, whether it's this Roth that they're putting money into or a Roth that's dead and not being used, the only way this would apply is if she was brand new to the Roth scene and opened her first one less than 5 years ago.
And another thing that very few people know, the revenue code does not say the IRA has to be open
yeah.
for 5 years.
Right.
You could do your first, 1998 is when Roths first came out. Let's say in 2000, you opened up a Roth in January of 2000, you thought it was really great, but in January of 2001... you all of a sudden needed the money. You lost your job. Remember, there was a recession back then. So you closed that Roth, Chris, and took out your money.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to keep the Roth open. You've opened one. 5 years later, you've
correct.
Been in the Roth program.
Exactly.
So His first question, well, his only question, will either of the 2 5-year rules apply? We don't think it's going to apply to your mother. It could, as Chris alluded to, but we don't think it will. And then the other way to get money out, just in case people are wondering, it's not just a matter of having a Roth IRA that's 5 years old or being in the Roth program for at least a 5-year time period, whether you contributed or not. You also have to complete the qualified withdrawal, which is one of the 4 following things. You take money out after the age of 59 and a half, and in the mother's case, she clearly is at 82. You die. I hope that doesn't happen to the mom. You become disabled, or you buy a first-time home, and you want to take out $10,000 of earnings inside the Roth tax-free. That's how you take a qualified withdrawal. Number one, you got to have or be in the Roth program for 5 years. Number two, you're over 59 and a half, dead, disabled, or buying a first-time home. And if you satisfy both of those measures, that's a qualified Roth withdrawal. The other 5-year rule applies to conversions. And that's what he's doing. He's helping his mother stay in a very low bracket, in fact, so low that no taxes are going to be owed on the conversion. And a conversion is when his mom takes money from a traditional IRA, which would be subject to income taxes, and move it to a Roth IRA where distributions will not be subject to income taxes. So as he does those conversions, technically, there is a 5-year rule for all conversions that you cannot take. You can take the converted money out at any time without taxes or penalty. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But the earnings have to stay in for 5 years. However, that has to do with avoiding the 10% penalty for taking money out of a Roth IRA before the age of 59 and a half. His mom is 82, so that 5-year rule right. doesn't apply either. Nope. So in his particular case, I don't think either 5-year rule applies to the mom.
No.
And other people may be sitting there thinking, why on God's good earth is he doing this?
I'm glad you're saying this because I've been itching to say what you're about to say.
This is a wonderful strategy.
It's wonderful.
It's brilliant. I love it. We've talked brilliant. About this on the show. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's brilliant. We've talked about it. What he's doing, let's just say he's, I don't know who he is. I don't even know if it's a he. Mm-hmm. Let's just say he or she is a doctor in the 39.6% tax bracket, plus the California, which they tax the hell out of people. So he could be faced with another 10, 11% in income taxes in California. As his personal tax rate. But his mom wants to give him her account at her passing. Well, by helping her convert at zero taxes and put the money in a Roth, which will be now exempt forever from required minimum distributions, hopefully growing another 10, 15, 20 years if this woman lives long enough, and all growing 100% tax-free, and then when he inherits it, and let's just pretend he was in the 39.6 plus another 11% in state and local income taxes in California, 100% tax-free.
Because it's in a Roth.
Because it's in a Roth.
If it goes to him still in the traditional IRA, then when he takes it out, it's going to be taxed at his rate instead of hers. So this is a very, very wise strategy when you have a parent or grandparent, for that matter, who happens to be in a much lower tax bracket than the beneficiary of the IRA. The IRA, the beneficiary who is going to get it when the owner passes away. If the beneficiary is in a much higher tax bracket, it behooves everyone to find a way to do these conversions prior to the owner of the IRA's
death. We have had cases
in
this office where the beneficiaries have paid the taxes
yeah.
at the parent's lower tax rate to get the money into a Roth because it's going to benefit them.
Absolutely.
So, again, this is one of the reasons we brought advanced tax planning finally in-house. So many tax preparers and advisors are not counseling on this. Clearly, this man or woman, I don't have any indication of who wrote this, but clearly this child knows enough mm-hmm. to help the parent do this.
Right, and the typical tax preparer would think about, well, why would we waste the time and effort and the paperwork to convert it to a Roth? She's in an ultra-low tax bracket right now, so when she takes it out, it's going to be tax-free anyway, so why are we messing with this?
Exactly.
Well, we're messing this with this because we're looking ahead. We're looking ahead to the future and what's going to happen to that account and the possible enormous taxes that might be applied if something like this isn't done. So that music, guess what that means, Jim?
Time for the first
break. End of the first segment, yes. And when we come back, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which is the year that Social Security started. This popular song was actually originally written in 1934 and introduced in the musical Here Is My Heart with Bing Crosby in the musical. He did a lot of musicals back then. Had a lot of popular songs as well. I don't think this is a song that we've heard on the show before. So we'll hear what that song is when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Beautiful miracle, pardon my lyrical rhapsody, but can't you see, oh, you have captured me, being so glamorous now, can't you be amorous just with me, make it soon,
cop a look at that. Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs in 1935. It was a... performed by Bing Crosby, of course. It was called Love is Around the Corner. Well, Love is Just Around the Corner, actually, is the full title. And became a standard back in 1935. Was used in a couple of movies back then. The one in 1935 was a film called Millions in the Air. But it's been re-recorded many times by the bigs. The big jazz vocalists, Frank Sinatra, Mel Torme, Kenny Rogers. I guess I wouldn't call him a jazz vocalist, but... he put his country spin on it, apparently.
But that is a very appropriate song for the day of the week it is.
Love is just around the corner. Yeah.
It's Valentine's Day
today. Well, people aren't listening to it on Valentine's Day, but we're in the romantical mood here.
Well, right? I'm not. You are.
Well, you should be. You're getting ready to go to a Valentine's Day event.
Anti-Valentine's Day party.
Okay. It's a party with a bunch of singles where there's drinking and dancing. That sounds like Valentine's Day to me.
No, that sounds different. This is a G-rated show, so I won't say.
A gathering of singles where there's drinking and dancing? That's
can lead
not
to trouble.
G-rated? Afterward, not at the actual event.
No, not at the event, but yeah. After.
We're all adults here.
You don't know who's listening. My mother could be listening.
Since you're here, she knows what happens after.
Okay. So we have a few more questions we have to get to because I won't be here for the second
half. 23 minutes for you to get all your words out.
To get, and it's going to be hard. We got five more questions. We aren't going to get to all five of these. That I can tell you.
Maybe you should stay a little longer. Maybe into the third segment.
No, what time is it?
2:30.
It's already 2:30. I'd like to be home by no later than 3:45, so I can be out by 4:30. So it ain't going to happen.
No. Okay.
Okay, so greetings. It begins. I have a short
greetings from West Virginia. No,
this person didn't indicate at all in here where they're from. But again, I will reach
out. That's implied. Greetings from West Virginia.
You're just desperate to get someone from. For those who don't know, we go through this every week here. We have a map of the United States behind us, which we still have to get up on the website so people can see it. But we have a map of the United States behind us. We are putting little stars on every state we get an email question from, and soon it'll have to be callers as well.
Certainly.
Because we're going to be doing live calls. For those who didn't hear in the first segment, we are going to be taking this podcast live, and it will be every Tuesday afternoon, 2 to 4 Mountain Time. So you're going to have to adjust it for whatever time zone you're in. You'll be able to go to Facebook Live.
So West Virginia, that'll be 4 o'clock.
You go to Facebook Live. Do not ask me how, but somehow you get onto Facebook Live.
You'll just go to our Facebook page.
Apparently we have a Facebook page. And somehow you're going to do something. and you're going to hear us as we're actually recording the show. And we got a little plug here. I'm holding it in my hand. I know you can't see it. Chris said we plug any phone into this here little plug, and if you call the office, we'll be able to put you on the show, and you can ask your questions live and chat with us a little and get our answers, and it should be an interesting thing. We're going to try it. It's something new. If no one calls, we'll go back to the old way, but if it works out and our iTunians can listen to us during the day, Tuesday afternoons, 2 to 4 Mountain Time, which would be 4 to 6 Eastern Time, which would be 1 to 3 Western Time. Is that what it's called?
Pacific Time.
Mm-hmm. And we got Central in there somewhere, too.
They're in between.
They're in between everything. Mm-hmm. So in Arizona, whatever the hell time zone you're in.
Yeah. Half of the year it'll be one time, the other half the other time.
Yeah, so whatever is applying in Arizona. But we think that'll be a pretty cool thing, and then it'll play on iTunes that coming Saturday. So it'll give all these emailers a chance to actually talk to us live. But that's coming. That should hopefully be happening in the next few months. Okay, so back to the map. We have about half the map filled, so we're still trying to get many states. For some reason, Chris has fixated, at least for my goodness, 7-8 months now, on West Virginia. It is consuming him. He dreams of West Virginia.
I do. And I've never been there, but it just envisions.
You may have to go there. But he wants someone from West Virginia
to
contact
him. Well, it just seems it's a glaring void in our star map here, because every state surrounding West Virginia has a star. We've been contacted from all states touching West Virginia, and it's just sitting there begging for a star to be applied, and nothing.
And there are five states that surround West Virginia, so it's a pretty glaring hole. Mm-hmm. It's like a donut.
It is.
So the hole is West Virginia. I don't know if this Georgette, she signed it Georgette, if this Georgette is from West Virginia or not. But we will ask.
Well, there'll be a party the day West Virginia contacts us.
Okay, so this is another Roth question. So it begins, greetings. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty short question about Roth IRA conversions that may be of interest to others. Mm. So, assuming an individual who's at least 59 and a half years old, and I want to stop here, you don't have to be at least 59 and a half years old to do a Roth conversion. You can convert at any age. There is no 10% penalty on Roth conversions. Taxes will be owed on the conversion, but they will be owed no matter what age you are, right, under 59 and a half or over 59 and a half. But you do not have to wait to 59 and a half mm-hmm. to do a Roth conversion. Okay. Assuming an individual at age 59 and a half years or older is planning on converting every year from an IRA, should one delay their conversion when both the stock and bond markets are down, i.e. in a bear market? Or does this not matter, since the funds are cheaper in price anyway because the market is down? One additional question. I have read recommendations to pay taxes on a Roth conversion from money outside of the IRA. Do you agree with this statement? Yes, that would I'll answer the second question first. Mm-hmm. We recommend, if at all possible, to pay taxes with other monies and not monies coming from the retirement account.
Keeps more money in the account.
Keeps more money in the IRA or in the Roth IRA. If you are under 59 and a half, and this might be why she mentioned the age 59 and a half or older. If you're under 59 and a half, though, and you are going to pay the taxes with IRA money, you will have to pay a 10% penalty on the money you need to pay the taxes on. So it's kind of self-defeating there. Yeah. So we do recommend, if you don't have the money to pay the taxes, it may not be a good thing to do the conversion. But if you have the money, it may be a good thing to do the conversion. We can't say with a blanket statement everyone should do a conversion. But for the most part, the answer to that part of your question, Georgette, is yes, we agree with that. You should pay from other monies. As far as when or getting into market timing, I should only convert when the market is down or only convert when the market is up. We don't pay attention to that at all. I never have. Now, I would pay
not
attention
if it's for
to
timing
it afterwards.
But
But prior to it, if you are converting, it should be because you intend to let this money grow for a very long time. If you are going to convert and need this money in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you may not want to convert unless for some bizarre reason you happen to be in a very low tax bracket that year and a conversion would make sense from a tax standpoint. But it doesn't matter to me if you can convert when the market's at 20,000 or if the market's at 15,000. It's not. It might make a difference in the short term. It might make a difference 6 months from now, 12 months from now. But I'm telling you, it's not going to make a difference 6 years from now or 12 years from now.
Well, it makes a difference in how much tax you're going
to
pay.
It could, but on the other way around, what I was trying to get to, what matters more is what happens to the market after the conversion, not before, listener. Before, I don't care. What happens is from the period of time you convert to October 15th of the following year, that's the period of time you have to undo the conversion. So today is February 14th, 2017. If I converted today and the market's at 20-something thousand, I'm not paying attention to being at 20,000. I don't care. What matters more to me is where is the market going to be this time next year when I'm doing my taxes? Now, let's say the market is now at 10,000 this time next year. I'm going to want to undo that conversion, Chris. Mm-hmm. I'm going to want to file a recharacterization and undo it. But if the market is worth $30,000, I'm not going to undo it. I'm going to let it stay there. Mm-hmm. So what matters more, listener, is not the value of the market before the conversion. It's the value of the market after the conversion. And remember, even if it's, let's just pretend again, I converted when the market was at 20,000. By market, I'm talking the Dow. The market's at 20,000. Let's just pretend for the sake of argument. And I convert February 14th, 2017, February 14th, 2018, as I'm getting ready for the fifth annual anti-Valentine's Day party for single people. The market is still at 20,000. So I may leave it and not do anything. But September 15th, the market has dropped to 10,000. I can unconvert then. I can recharacterize up to October 15th of the year following the year I convert. I can undo it all up to October 15th of 2018. So pay more attention, listener, to what the market does after you convert than what it does before you convert. And keep in mind, you only have until October 15th of the year following the year you convert to undo it or recharacterize. Anything you want to add?
I don't disagree with anything that you said. I might want to put a little different spin on it because I interpreted her question maybe a little differently. I interpreted it as, hey, you're doing these conversions, but then the market has a huge drawdown. Market goes way down, in your example, going from 20,000 to 10,000. In my eyes, that's an opportunity to get as much conversion as I can done while it's down. I did exactly that after the 2008 financial crisis. When the market was down, I converted a bunch, as much as I could,
right?
Because I was confident. I had no idea for sure. Nobody knows for sure, but I was pretty convinced that eventually the market was going to go back up, and I'd much rather have all of that gain that was going to happen over in a Roth.
I wouldn't dispute that, but just because the market's at an all-time high or close to an all-time high doesn't mean all future growth is gone.
No, I wouldn't avoid converting.
Right,
but
it's going to continue.
Right. If I was in this process of trying to convert during this age 60 to 70 time period, which is kind of a really sweet spot for doing this for a lot of people, I would do it on a regular basis regardless. Unless there's a huge drawdown, I would say, wow, let's do extra this year if we can, because not only do we have this tax thing going on, but we're converting so many more of what we owe at depressed prices right now.
Absolutely. I will agree. If the market is down, you can make lemons out of lemonade. Other way around. Huh?
Other way around.
If the market's up?
No. You make lemonade out of lemons. You don't make lemon out of lemonade.
What are you talking about?
You said...
If you make lemons out of lemonade.
No,
I mean, lemonade out of lemons.
Yes,
lemonade
bingo.
Out of lemons.
There we go.
Okay,
there
don't click that. Don't click.
Can I click it?
No, because I didn't muff it up. I just said it wrong.
What? I'll at least give you this. There. That's a little kinder.
If you make lemons out of lemonade. No, you no, make exactly. lemonade out of lemons.
Yes, because lemonade is more
right,
glorious.
Right, I get it. Yes.
Lemons are sour.
Now you got me. What was I saying now?
Make hay while the sun shines.
You got me all confused. But anyways, I was on a tear.
Maybe consider converting more. If you think it's going to go up from there, you know, if it's
yes, but for the most part, I pay much more attention to what happens mm-hmm. to a person's Roth after the conversion, right. not before.
Because it's atypical for a huge drawdown like what we saw in 2008. Could happen again, probably will, but they're luckily for us not real frequent.
But if the market is down, yes, you can recoup that mm-hmm. As you go forward.
Make some lemonade.
Okay, we have another Roth question. Mm-hmm. Jim, I have a Roth question. Mm-hmm. And this person is from Colorado. So, do we have a star in Colorado?
Oh, yeah, we do.
We do. Okay.
And a paw print for some reason.
The paw print is where my old house was, and that was supposed to be Mosby's paw, my dog.
Okay.
Okay. In early 2016, I made our 2016 Roth IRA contributions of $6,000 each to his and his wife's Roth IRA. Mm-hmm.
Now, those weren't the limits, just so you correct. Just be aware. He could have put in more than that.
Could have put in more. I am now doing my 2016 taxes, and my software is telling me I owe a penalty for over-contributions to my Roth IRA, and I'm not laughing at him. Because my earnings are too high. I'm laughing at the software telling him, you owe a penalty. Shouldn't the software be telling him you can undo it? That was his question. Mm-hmm. The software is telling me I owe a penalty for over-contributions because my earnings are too high at roughly $188,000. Mm-hmm. We are now into 2017. Can I correct this problem to make them say $3,000 as a contribution to each IRA and eliminate the penalty?
Yes.
So this is a problem that mm-hmm. arises this time of year.
It does.
People do these tax calculations in 2016, but they don't do their 2016 taxes until 2017. And now they're
sometimes
being told.
Sometimes they earn too much, got a bonus right. or something. And
so there's a few moving parts here for this gentleman. The first thing is the IRS or the government does limit who can put money into a Roth IRA. And a married couple is maxed out. And I don't have the 2017 numbers, do you?
It's about 180 something.
No, it's at
so
one.
He's right,
it was
maybe
one,
192 now. Or
yeah, it's 194
like
last year was the high end.
That was the high end, but I mean, it starts being phased out.
It was 188 last
right,
year.
188, and then it phases out after that. So it's not like it's a cliff where suddenly you hit a dollar amount and you can't contribute at all. There's a phase out period, and then once you reach that high end limit, then it's cut off completely. So it sounds like there within he could have put in half of that at 3,000. He must have looked at this, found himself to be about halfway in that phase out period, and allowed to put in 3,000 instead of the full 6,500, which he
so
could.
The phase outs mm-hmm. for 2017, I have them here for
yeah,
married.
But this is 2016 taxes, 2016. So we should be using those numbers for him.
Oh.
But he's already figured that out.
He's figured that out.
The
so
point
I'm going to help our right. listeners. Yeah. Between 186 and 196 is the 2017 phase outs. So he at 188 is knee deep in the middle, mm-hmm. and it might explain why he said he could only put 3,000
right.
in. So his software told him he owes a penalty. Yep. The software isn't necessarily wrong. It's just not telling him the whole story.
Right. Yeah.
The software is correct. The IRS will consider any money you're not allowed to put in. So remember, there's a phase out. As I said, the phase out amount for this year, what did I say it was?
186.
Again? 186 to 196. If you earn between those numbers, the 6.5 or 6,000 that you can contribute, and we can't assume 6,000 was his, he could have put in more. He could have put in more if he's over 50.
Well, I assumed he put in 6,000.
Well, he'd have to be
because
if he was
yeah.
under 50, it would only be 5,500. So,
right.
Okay, good point. But
he could actually, that could have been his first great mistake, putting in 6,000.
If he's over 50.
If he was less than 50.
Less than 50.
Yeah. But I was assuming he at least didn't make that mistake.
Right. So his software told him, hey, man, you earned too much. Mm-hmm. So you put too much money in. So the IRS wants a penalty of 6% on an excess contribution. And you still have to take the money out. I don't know why the software hasn't told him that.
It's wait until next year to tell him that.
When you owe another penalty.
Right, exactly.
So he can easily get around it because the government realizes this very thing can happen. So he has two options. He can take out the, now he put in six each. He's saying it should be three each. Let's just assume his math is right. So he has to take out $3,000 from his and $3,000 from his wife's. He has two choices. He can just take out the excess contribution, the $3,000, plus any associated gain minus any associated loss. And this calculation is a little difficult to do if he mingled. Remember our jingle, if you mingle you mangle. So if he did these contributions into an existing Roth, and I bet you he did, the calculation to determine how much that $3,000 that he shouldn't have put in, how much that $3,000 earned or lost is a little convoluted. Mm-hmm. I don't want to walk people through this.
Yeah.
But I did reach out to him to let him know Justin has a spreadsheet and can assist him with this that he wrote to kind of do this.
The bottom line is it is not as simple as moving exactly $3,000 back through a recharacterization.
And I told him that.
Because things have happened since he put the money in.
Exactly.
That's the bottom line.
Exactly. So you have to remove. There's two numbers. The dollar amount you're going to tell the IRS you're removing, $3,000, and the actual amount you remove. It's $3,000 plus any gains minus any losses. So that's his first option. He will owe no taxes on the $3,000. He will owe taxes if there's any gain. So when he takes the $3,000, if he took it out as a withdrawal, he can take the $3,000 out, no taxes, because it's a Roth. He never deducted them, so it's tax-free. But the gain will be subject to taxes. And if he's under 59 and a half or his wife is under 59 and a half, they will have to pay a 10% penalty on the gain as well.
That's if he just withdraws it.
But there's another option I told him. He can recharacterize. And so many people associate the verbiage recharacterization with Roth conversions. I converted an IRA to a Roth IRA and I want to turn it around and get it back to a traditional IRA. But a recharacterization works for contributions as well. So if he doesn't want to take it out, and that's an option if he did, he can recharacterize the $3,000, Chris. And it's the same thing. He's going to recharacterize $3,000, but he is going to move a different dollar amount. It'll be $3,000 plus any gains minus any losses. But when you recharacterize, there's no taxes owed. He's going to recharacterize it to a traditional IRA. He earns far too much money to deduct those contributions, so it'll be a non-deductible traditional IRA he's going to recharacterize it to. And there'll be no taxes owed on the gain or a penalty on the gain because the IRS treats it as if he had put that money in the IRA, a traditional IRA, on day one. It's as if it never was put in the Roth. So they're not going to tax and penalize you like they will if he was to remove that money. The biggest calculation he needs to do is determine any associated earnings on the $3,000 in his and his wife's IRA. They're going to be two separate calculations because they have two separate IRAs, and the numbers will probably be different unless for some odd reason they were invested in the exact same thing on the exact same day in their...
In the exact same amounts and everything.
Right, in their respective Roth IRAs. But it's very easy to do, listener. It is not hard. Work with the custodian of your Roth IRA. They'll help you. You just need to determine, do you want to take it out and then, you know, spend the money, do something else? So you're going to remove the excess contribution plus any earnings minus any losses? Or do you want to recharacterize it to a non-deductible IRA? One thing I'll warn him on that, he is going to create basis in his non-deductible IRA, Chris. Basis is a nightmare.
Plus, if he, and we're going to talk about this in the upcoming segments, if he's got a dream of using the backdoor Roth contribution technique, the last thing he wants to do is create Well, I take it back.
He could do this.
I take it back.
Yeah. I know where you're going with this, but don't go down that rabbit
hole. I'm not going to go that route right now. So we'll talk about why this kind of mixing in a traditional IRA issue can be problematic.
He could, theoretically,
but
if he does not have an existing IRA and his wife does not have an existing IRA, he can recharacterize. Remember, listener, do not have an existing IRA and try this at home. No existing IRA. You would take the $3,000, recharacterize it, plus any earnings minus any losses, to a non-deductible IRA, wait a little bit of time, and convert that, Chris, to a Roth IRA, 100% tax-free, problem solved. So that's another option that they can do. All of this is going to require Form 8606. When we come back, Chris and Justin, because I'm going to a singles sorte for Valentine's Day, but Chris and Justin will be back talking about Form 8606 and how to file it and how to do it when doing a backdoor Roth contribution.
Perfect. So when we come back from this break, we're going to hear this week's top hit back in 1977. It was originally written and recorded by Bruce Springsteen for his debut album in 1973, but it never caught on until this English rock band decided to give it a go in 1977.
I know this song. I like it. Man for Man.
Oh, I didn't figure you'd know this one. So everyone else will. Oh, fine. Let the cat out of the bag.
Well, thanks. I'm leaving.
I know. Great.
And on that, folks, I'm out of here.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. This was a top song this week back in 1977 as we look back 40 years. The hint, if those of you who didn't catch it before the break, was written and recorded originally by Bruce Springsteen for his debut album. I didn't believe that hint until I went back and listened to it. And it is true. He recorded a very different version of this. The words were recognizable, but the rest of it pretty much no.
It's funny you say that. Growing up, you know, this was always a song that you would hear in bars and whatnot, typically at closing. And my friends and I had many versions of words or lyrics that we would sing to there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was fairly typical.
Do we know
this
what they
performed
are?
By Manfred Mann's Earth Band, this version from England. Band changed a few of the lines in this song from Springsteen's version. Springsteen said, "Cut loose like a deuce." That was his version. They changed it to "revved up like a deuce," which, of course, sounds more like "wrapped up like a douche."
Right. Yes, it does.
There were many arguments in high school over, well, I wasn't in high school in 77, but in junior high. When were you in school? 1977. When did you listen to this song?
This song, in a bar. It carries on forever.
I guess it does linger on. But this was the deuce, of course, is in reference to 1932 Ford Deuce Coupe, which was popular. A popular car to make into a hot rod. So there's the revved up, cut loose kind of thing.
Okay.
It's actually talking about the little Deuce Coupe, same genre as that. So, but I had no idea though. You learn something new every day on the Retirement and IRA Show. This time it was the fact that Bruce Springsteen wrote and recorded that song originally. So you've heard his voice. This is Justin Fundelinski, who is here in our office, and Jim mentions Justin quite a lot. And
he does.
And So we do talk about you a fair amount. We don't invite you onto the show.
No, no, much. It's true. We should. What do you guys talk about?
He usually talks about you getting your enrolled agent status with the IRS, so you can do some tax work for us and kind of fold some tax strategy work into our overall retirement plans. And
Good things.
Those are good things for a lot of people, the number two expense in their overall retirement plan, when we look at the cash outflows, which are the kind we don't like, right? We like cash coming in, but always makes me tear up a little bit when it leaves. But those cash outflows, the second largest category for many, many people are taxes.
Oh, it's enormous.
The largest part oftentimes is medical expenses, all the things, whether it's premiums and prescriptions and the out-of-pocket costs and all that adds up quickly, as anyone in or approaching retirement can relate to, because even those of us way pre-retirement, medical expenses are pretty tremendous. But you might, when you ask, well, what's next? People think housing or gasoline, transportation costs, or all these things. No, not even close. No. It's taxes. So when you can make an impact on taxes, and the kind of impact we like to make is reducing them, make an impact on taxes, it can really change your standard of living in retirement. So that's why it's such a focus when doing a full-blown retirement plan, that we wanted to bring it in-house a little more, because, like I said, there's unique aspects to retirement planning and tax questions when you're dealing with tax issues with a long-term horizon rather than just taxes
this year,
particular year, which is the common way for most tax preparers to look at it. So Justin's been doing some great work there with us on those plans. He does actually most of the work, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I'd say around 99%.
Mm-hmm, approximately. Yeah. So that would be most, Justin. But today he's joining us to talk about one particular tax-related issue, which is the details of the Form 8606, which Jim mentions quite frequently on the show whenever we're talking about contribution, tracking basis. Really,
yeah.
Tracking basis in IRAs.
That's really what it's... I mean, there's three parts to the 8606, and I think the biggest focus that most people need to look at, especially if they're listening to the show and they're doing non-deductible IRA contributions, it's the first part. It's tracking that basis, because no one else is doing it for you. Your financial advisor probably isn't doing it for you. The tax preparer is probably not doing a good job of it. So you really got to pay attention to this form specifically every year. Yeah.
And the title of the form even is
non-deductible IRAs.
Non-deductible IRAs. And people might, let's clear up first, if maybe people haven't heard previous shows and we've talked about this, why a person might want to make a non-deductible IRA contribution. Kind of the traditional approach when you contribute to a traditional IRA is you're going to contribute so that you can avoid paying taxes on that income today. So you get a tax deduction for the contribution. It's thus deductible. Mm-hmm. And then you don't avoid taxes forever on it, of course. Eventually, you'll have to pay the tax man. And when you take the money out, that's when the taxes are due. So that's what we call what happens is it's a tax deferral mechanism where effectively you're not recognizing the income in the year you earned it, but rather recognizing the income as it comes out of the IRA when you take distributions.
Right.
But a non-deductible contribution is where you don't write it off. You don't take the deduction. You still put money in, and people wonder, why the heck would I want to do that? And there's a variety of reasons why you might want to do that. One we will probably get to if we talk about backdoor Roth contributions. But you can still have the growth with that grow tax deferred. So even though the original contribution was not deductible, once it's in the IRA, any growth that occurs after that, you get the tax deferral mechanism on. So that's one reason why you might want to do it. And it also can happen when it's the only way you can get money in.
And that's probably the more typical.
That's the most typical. Yeah. It's I would say most people use other methods of saving for retirement if they have the choice, but sometimes you don't have the choice. So in what case are you forced to make a non-deductible contribution to an IRA?
Well, there are deductible contribution limits mm-hmm. that the IRS sets, and if you earn more than a certain amount, you cannot deduct it on your taxes.
Right. So it's do you have the 2017 numbers by any chance?
I don't.
Okay,
I don't.
That's $115,000,
$118,000,
somewhere in that range. I don't memorize that stuff anymore. When I was younger, I used to go through this whole thing every year of memorizing all these changes because they update them every single year. And I finally got to the point where I don't do that because I can look it up at a moment's notice. Right. So the point is there's a certain limit where if you earn over that, you can no longer qualify to deduct the contribution to the IRA. That is really the trigger with that income thing. Some people think, well, I can't contribute to an IRA if I make too much.
Nope,
that's not true.
There's a whole other limit for that.
Right. You know? That's not true. You can contribute. You just may not be able to deduct the contribution to the IRA. So if someone makes over that amount, then they're forced to do this. And what that creates then is the beginning part of this where we track basis. So why don't you describe kind of what they're going through at the beginning of this 8606 form?
Well, what they're doing is basis is, a little bit different than what typically people see as cost basis. Basis in this fact is things that you did not deduct on your taxes. And every time you put money into an IRA, generally, the default is that there is zero basis in that.
Mm-hmm. There's no tax basis.
There's no tax basis, mm-hmm. exactly. So when you take money out of that IRA, it's fully taxable. But if you're putting money in on a after-tax basis into a traditional IRA, then that money that you take out is not completely taxable because you already paid tax on some of it, and you're not going to get taxed twice.
So if you do it right, and that's really the penalty for not tracking this properly. And when you mention that sometimes people aren't tracking the basis properly, mm-hmm. the what backfires here is you're going to end up without being able to track and clearly show or prove to the IRS that you have after-tax basis in the IRA. When you take the money out, the default is assuming you owe taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to essentially prove to them that no, this X amount, whatever it is money that I put in mm-hmm. after tax. I've already paid the tax, so I am not obligated to pay tax on it again. If you fail to track that, if you just went to the IRS and said, you know, I've been doing this all these years, but I didn't track it at all. I have no idea what it is. And the IRS will say, that's fine. Just take it out as regular distributions and pay tax on the whole thing and we'll call it good. They're more than happy to collect tax from you more than once on the same earnings. They have no problem.
No doubt about that.
No penalty for doing so.
And you can, in fact, go back and amend these 8606s if you have not been doing this and you do have basis in there. But going back and doing that is not an easy task. You'd have to have remembered all of your contributions or get documentation of that to prove it. You'd have to have all your old, what they're called 5498s. These are the forms that the custodians that hold your IRA send you when you make contributions. You'd have to have the end-of-year values for all your IRAs. So it's a real pain to all of a sudden come back and try and figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
So doing it right in the first place is going to really be a benefit.
Right. So yeah. The bottom line on these, if you're ever making non-deductible contributions to your IRA, make absolutely sure that you or your taxpayer, or if you have a financial advisor who's helping you with this in some way, they're helping you navigate these choices with these retirement accounts, someone's got to be tracking this properly every single year on Form 8606 to avoid having to clean up a big mess or ultimately having to pay taxes twice on the same earnings.
Yeah, and it's not only necessarily the contributions that you make on a non-tax or non-deductible IRA contribution. It's also you have to adjust that basis downward as you take money out of those IRAs just as distributions or if I don't know if we're getting to that point, but on a Roth conversion strategy, that will also reduce the basis numbers, and you have to record that on Form 8606.
So let's, before we talk about the Roth conversion, let's just talk about, in general, taking money out of a traditional IRA that has a mixture of basis and pre-tax money that's in there. When it comes out, the IRS requires that you treat that on a pro rata basis,
right,
is what they call it. So when you take money out of the IRA, let's say, just to put some nice small numbers everyone can track here, let's say you put in $50 as a non-deductible contribution, mm-hmm, and you put in $50 and deducted it in another year. So you've got, you know, half and half in there.
And makes no the math growth or anything
real
like
easy,
that.
And we won't talk about growth or anything. Yeah. Then when you go take $10 out, mm-hmm, say it sits in there, and later on you take a distribution from the IRA for $10, you don't get to say, well, I'm going to take out the $10 from the 50 that is basis, where the tax has already been paid, because I want to take it out tax-free,
right,
and leave the other in there. Mm-hmm. You cannot, mm-hmm, specify like that in an IRA account. When it comes out pro rata. So pro rata means weighted, or the percentages as it exists in the account. So for my example, it's half and half.
Right.
Right. So right, of that $10 that comes out, how much is going to be taxable?
$5 will be taxable.
Half of it will be taxable. Yeah. The other half will be return of basis. Now, moving forward, there's only 90 in the account, mm-hmm, 45 of basis and 45 that's after tax. So, or pre-tax, if you will. So you've got to track all that. So again, this form, not only does it track when you're putting money in and making the adjustments every year, it also is going to track as you put as you take money out,
exactly,
through a distribution. So once you get older and you're taking distributions from these accounts, the 8606 is still going to come into play. And really, as long as you have an IRA with basis in it, as long as you've got an IRA,
that's the only reason
you've got to be using the 8606 every year to keep track of what's happened with that IRA that, mm-hmm, particular year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it says non-deductible IRAs right at the top. So it's only if you have basis in an IRA would you ever use this form. There's no other reason.
Perfect. So to the Roth conversion. So I said when you take a distribution from the IRA, you have to worry about this pro rata rule. When you convert from a traditional IRA to a Roth, the same distribution rules hold. It still comes out pro rata. It's actually effectively considered a distribution. That's why it's treated the same. You just avoid any tax consequences because you're immediately, well, you avoid any penalty consequences because you're putting it immediately back into another qualified retirement account.
Exactly.
There is tax consequences because you're removing at least some of it that hasn't been taxed, mm-hmm, and putting it into a Roth, which has to take only after tax contributions. But in my example, for instance, had $50 of basis in there and $50 that was pre-tax in there. Mm-hmm. If you converted that $100 over to the Roth, you'd have to treat it and prorate it at 50-50. Even if the $10 was converted to the Roth, you can't say, oh, I only want to convert the basis, which I've already paid tax on, to the Roth, because then I'm only using after-tax money, so that's what the Roth wants to take in.
Right.
And you can't do that. No. It's got to come out pro rata. So that leads us to why we recommend, if you want to do the backdoor Roth contribution technique, which I'm going to describe momentarily, you always want to do it if you've got a clean, empty, traditional IRA into which you can place non-deductible contributions. If there's going to be a mix...
Well, that's a nightmare.
It doesn't work well.
That's a nightmare. And if you have other traditional IRAs out there, those come into play.
Right.
Because just because it's coming out of one account that doesn't have any of this basis in it, or excuse me, let me reverse that. just because you're taking money out that is all basis from one account, if you have another IRA out there that does not have basis, the IRS looks at that both your IRAs under one umbrella as one IRA, and it'll have to be a pro rata.
Right. People don't really have more than one IRA in the IRS's eyes.
Right.
So what Justin is saying is, you might say, well, I'll just keep all my deductible contributions over here in an IRA on the right side, and on the left side, I'm going to have just an IRA with non-deductible contributions in it. So all the basis is over in one of them, and the other side is purely a traditional IRA with pre-tax contributions sitting in it. No, that is not how the IRS sees it. Just because you might physically have it at two places, even if it's physically at two different custodians, held by two different companies for you, it's still one giant IRA, and it falls under the pro rata rule.
That's right.
So when you do what I'm about to describe, the Roth backdoor contribution technique, you only can do that effectively if you've got no existing traditional IRA with money in it. Mm-hmm. It can be open. You might have an IRA that's been open for years that had money in it previously. But as long as that money is out of there, so it's nice and clean and empty, that's when this conversion, backdoor contribution / conversion approach will work. So before I talk about how to do it, let's talk about the why. So Roths, as we mentioned, Jim mentioned actually in a previous segment, that there are limits on who can contribute to a Roth IRA. And those limits, he pulled them up, I think the 2017 limits for a married filing jointly, which is the most common case, so that we have at our fingertips. The upper limit is $186,000 is where it starts, and it begins a phase out between $186,000 and $196,000, where if you earn over $186,000, the amount you can contribute, you're allowed to contribute to a Roth, declines until, if you're making $196,000 or more, eliminates the ability to contribute to a Roth completely.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those people want to put money in a Roth.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So there's a couple of different ways. One way is they already have a traditional IRA or maybe even a 401k that they are allowed to take money out of. They could convert money from those accounts into a Roth IRA. There are no earnings limits anymore on Roth conversions.
That's right.
There used to be. Prior to 2010, if you made over $100,000, so way less than the limit I just mentioned,
absolutely,
if you made over $100,000, you couldn't convert. You basically were barred from making these large movements of money from pre-tax accounts into the after-tax Roth accounts. That was abolished. They didn't raise the limit. It's just gone now.
Do you know why they abolished it? Who was arguing for that? Any idea?
It was mostly a Republican push. I don't know who proposed it in the first place, but it was essentially seen as people, if you think about it, it may not been purely a Republicans versus Democrats kind of a thing, because one of the benefits to the government is when there's a conversion, what happens?
They get taxed.
Right. All that money gets taxed as it goes. So instead of the government waiting until people are older and in retirement, taking money out and gradually taxing it over time, if someone wants to convert now and pay taxes on it immediately, that helps the coffers at the Treasury and tax money flows in. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of side benefit. But I believe it was a Republican
push
yeah. From the side. But I'd have to go back and look at it. But it was 2010, and they actually granted some really interesting rules. In 2010, for those of you, just for a historical perspective here, they had a special rule that any conversion you made in 2010, you could either recognize as income in 2010, or you could recognize none of it in 2010, half of it in 2011, and the other half in 2012. So 2010 was the year of Roth conversions. Yeah. There was huge conversions. I will admit, I did it in 2010 with technically my wife's traditional IRA was converted to a Roth, because remember in 2010 we had just come out of the 2008 financial crisis, right. So the investments were typically kind of on down value-wise, and I thought, well, here's a chance we can convert before things go back up, convert at a lower asset amount, a dollar amount, and pay lower taxes, of course. And then hopefully, if things recover, then all that growth then will be tax-free instead of deferred taxes. And last time I checked, tax-free is better than tax deferred.
Yeah,
right.
I agree.
So 2010, there was enormous flows into as Roth conversions because not only could you do it, so it swung open the gates of being able to do it. It gave you that really special tax treatment where you could delay the tax obligation, essentially spread it over 3 years,
but still
zero
have
in the
Roth.
First year, yeah. half in the next year, and half in the year after that. They made it really attractive to convert in 2010.
Sounds like it.
So me and a lot of other people did that. So moving forward now, that rule still is in play, not spreading it out. Mm-hmm. That's gone. That was a one-time event. But anyone of any income level can convert to a Roth.
There in is any amount.
In any amount. And when you do a conversion, it can be part of the account. It can be all of the account, anything in between. And so that is the chink in the armor. That's the crack in the code, if you will, that creates this loophole that leads us to the backdoor Roth contribution. And what this allows us to do, there's the key elements that if you earn too much, you can't directly contribute to a Roth. However, you still can contribute to a non-deductible IRA. Now, technically what you're doing is contributing to what's called a traditional IRA in a non-deductible way. Okay, so it's sometimes when we talk about it, people think there's standing over here on the right is a non-deductible IRA, and over here is a traditional IRA. No, it's just one traditional IRA. The question is, did I deduct the contributions when they went in, or did I not deduct the contributions? So I could contribute to the non-deductible traditional IRA, but then what can I do after that? I can convert because there's no income limit to that. So we'll talk about the specifics of how we do that, how you could actually accomplish this after we come back from this short break. So here's the hint. You can guess ahead of time. That's what Jim tries to do, Justin.
Oh, boy.
So
oh boy.
This is a top hit from 1982. It isn't the number one song this week in 1982 because that still resides as Centerfold by the Jay Giles Band, but it held on for a very long period of time. So instead of playing that over and over and over again, we're going to play the number two song from 1982 this week. And it's considered to be one of the greatest love songs ever. And it was the number two spot on the charts for 6 weeks because it could never boot off the Jay Giles Band or I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett.
Well, it just so happens that 1982, I was but a glimmer in my parents' eyes. So
yes, but this is a song.
This may have played a part
this is a
in
song.
Me.
Oh, it's possible. I didn't know we were going that direction, but it's possible. We'll find out what that song is after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That was the number two song this week back in 1982 as we look back 35 years. And of course, it's Journey, right?
That's
you recognize
right.
that, right?
Well, I know who Journey is.
Yes, but you recognize the song, don't you?
No, even though, I don't think I've ever heard that song before.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That song is on all the time.
Maybe on the stations you listen to.
No, they replay it, and the other people record it, and like Mariah Carey's done it. Some of the people on, let's see, on The Voice. Do you watch The Voice?
I do not watch The Voice.
Oh, you're missing out. That's a good show. That's the best singing show on television.
My wife loves it. She loves it.
It's good because they get such a diversity of talent on there as far as different styles, mm-hmm. and it has nothing to do with what they look like, because at least in the beginning, towards right. the end, it does a little bit. But at the beginning, they have their backs turned,
and
so it's just all about the voice. So they can look like anything, and sometimes they get some interesting looking folks there. And but that doesn't, you know, if they go into a normal place and sing for somebody, a talent agent or something, if you don't look the part, biases the opinion of the listener. And here it's cool. And there's some, I can't believe how many talented people there are.
I've seen the my wife actually forces me to watch the finales and things like that. And mm-hmm. I'm usually impressed.
Earlier it's better, I think.
Oh, really?
At the end I get bored because at that point they're all so good. Early though, when to see them when they're just barely starting and see who makes it through just on their voice, regardless of their look or anything, that's actually the cooler part.
Okay.
So you need to watch it early instead of later.
All right.
So. Anyway, there's our plug for The Voice on, I don't even know what network it's on. You can find it in your local TV listings.
Right.
So back to why we listen to these songs. So if you remember, if you've been with us for the entire show, which is a darn long show, so congratulations on having the stamina to make it through approximately a two-hour show. The first song out of the first break was Love is Around the Corner. Actually, Love is Just Around the Corner, performed by Bing Crosby back in 1935. That we tied to our show because in 1935 Social Security started. Then we went to a top song in 1977, turned out to be Blinded by the Light, sung by the Manfred Mann's Earth Band, but originally by Bruce Springsteen back in 1973. But in 1977, it was the number one song. Did much better with it than Bruce did.
Apparently.
Bruce didn't get any traction on his version. And that's 40 years ago, and there's a piece of the Social Security legislation that describes how to calculate your Social Security benefit, and it involves what's called 40 elapsed years. So that was the number of years essentially described or assumed to be a typical career. Between they came up with it, and if you look back through the original documentation, this may be more detailed than people want, but it was assumed that, well, from about age 22 to 62, that's about a full, that's about a good full career for people. So we're going to start there. Then we're going to assume that, you know, you might take some years off. You might have some years, some times of unemployment. You might go off to school, get retraining. You might have a baby, whatever. So you might have a few years where your earnings aren't typical. So we're going to ignore 5 of those 40 years and only consider the remaining 35 years. And that gets us to 1982. If we look back 35 years, that's what got us to Open Arms by mm-hmm. Journey. Here, there's mm-hmm. the tie-in. That ultimately what's used, the number one, the most important thing that goes into your Social Security benefit calculation are those 35 computational years, those years of earnings that are actually going to go into the computation for your PIA, your primary insurance amount. So that's how it all ties to these songs. And as we, in the last segment, as we always do, we always hear an update on our blog post, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So we're going to get an update on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. I can't even say it. It's a very long web address.
It's your web
help
address.
Helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. No spaces, all run together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure everybody can
spell
it.
Very easy to find. Right. Or you. What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat?
Whoa, 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 whoa. So actually, in honor of Justin, this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, we're running a post that Justin did.
This is
Justin
to my
recorded a post.
Here.
Yes, wrote and recorded a post.
Did I record
at
a post?
One time?
Really?
Oh, you didn't record it? Who recorded it?
I don't know.
Did I record it?
For a while, I was doing the writing for recordings, and I imagine that's what.
Oh,
I
apologize. You aren't going to hear Justin's voice. It's probably going to be my voice reading Justin's words. I forgot. I think I did record
that.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the confusing things in the of the many things, obviously there has to be a lot confusing or we wouldn't have a blog. Right? Isn't that logical?
Right?
We have to answer questions about it. If it was simple, you couldn't have a blog about it. It would be a one page, here it is. Social Security is complicated. Claiming Social Security can be very complicated.
A wee bit.
So one of the aspects here is to earn a Social Security benefit, a retirement benefit specifically. There's other rules for different kinds of benefits, but for a retirement benefit, you have to earn 40 credits, is what they call them. It started out as 40 quarters of coverage, essentially meaning that you had to work at least 40 quarters, have earnings in at least 40 quarters, which a quarter of a year, of course, there's four of them. So at minimum, you'd have to work at least 10 years.
And then you become eligible.
Now, you, at that point, if you stopped, you wouldn't have very much of a benefit because, remember, 35 years goes into your calculation. And if you only have 10...
A lot of zeros there.
You got 25 zeros that are going to be in there because they don't just take the 10. They're going to consider all 35 years, 25 of which would be zeros. So, yes, that's the so consider it the minimum qualification. But in the blog post, reading your words, I describe how you actually earn these credits. They're called credits now. Originally, it was quarters because it had to do with working in every quarter of the year. But after a while, they determined that that was unfair to seasonal workers. So they removed the requirement that you earn money in every quarter of a year to earn your four quarters that year and instead turned it into credits. And you can earn up to four per year. So there still takes 10 years minimum to get all 40 of them. You can earn up to four, but you can earn them
in a day.
Almost. And this is kind of spinning off in another direction, but the reason why I say that is we ran across a bizarre situation. Now, our original thinking was since they didn't have the requirement for quarters, you could earn, you know, $5,000 in the first month of the year and never work the rest of the year and get your four quarters, get your four credits. That's true as long as you live the entire year.
Yeah.
If you pass away before hitting at least the first day of each quarter, if you pass away at the end of January, you're going to earn one credit that year, not
Shiesty.
Four.
Shiesty.
So you might wonder, well, why do we care? I'm dead. Your survivor cares.
Mm-hmm.
It matters to your survivor. And believe it or not, we had a case where someone ended up one credit short of creating a retirement benefit, which then would turn into a survivor benefit because they passed away. They earned plenty of money the last year that they were alive. They passed away before living long enough to be credited with all four credits.
What are the chances?
And they were short one credit. They ended up with 39 instead of 40, making it so the surviving spouse, received no survivor benefit. It was just one of those weird things.
It's awful.
So we don't talk about that specific case in here, but we do go into the difference between 40 quarters, 40 credits, how you actually earn them, and that's what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. What's new, pussycat? So that kind of a long segue, but an interesting story.
That blew my mind. Yeah.
That really did blow my mind. I couldn't believe that it was fair and that was really the rule. As the Social Security Administration was telling this to this survivor, and I had to research it, and even then, phone a friend, if you will, and submit it to a contact through which they contact Social Security experts on the other end. And came back, and even this person who is one of the that I contacted, who's one of the preeminent experts in Social Security in the country, if not, you know, which would also mean the world, since Social Security is just here in the United States.
Yes.
He was blown away. He never realized that that could happen.
Oh, that's crazy.
And he admitted this is just a tragic story of poor timing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to what we were talking about before the break. Backdoor Roth contributions.
Backdoor Roth contributions.
So as we left it, we described a situation where if you make too much money, you're not allowed to contribute directly to a Roth. However, at any earnings amount, you can contribute to a traditional IRA and not deduct the contribution. And we mentioned that you could convert money to a Roth from a traditional IRA at any income level. That's what opens the back door.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you want to get money into a Roth. You want to make a Roth contribution, but you make $200,000 married filing jointly. You clearly don't qualify to contribute directly. However, if you're under the age of 50, you could put up to $5,500 into a traditional IRA and not deduct the contribution.
Right.
So you pay tax on it just like you would have if you would have put it directly into the Roth. But instead, you put it into the traditional IRA but don't deduct it. Then you wait a reasonable amount of time, which that amount of time is not defined. Some experts say it doesn't matter since they didn't define it, so do it immediately. Others say wait till the next month. Some people say wait longer than that. We don't have a firm stance on that. It's really your decision. I think we usually counsel wait till the next month
We use a month, yeah.
And but it's undefined in the rules. And then you convert that contribution that went to the traditional IRA to the Roth. And since you already paid taxes on it, that conversion is done tax-free. Also penalty-free, because conversions are always penalty-free. So what happened? The money ended up in the Roth where you wanted it in the first place, but it went through the back door.
Yeah, it's just a workaround.
It's there. A loophole, clearly a loophole, that all indications it will eventually be closed. So maybe probably not this year, maybe not next year, coming shortly, I think this is going to be closed. No guarantees, though, because there's been things in the tax code that have stayed broken, if you will, for longer than I would have imagined they stay that way. But there's a lot of chatter back in Washington that from both sides of the aisle that this loophole is clearly a loophole and should probably be addressed. But for now, it's wide open.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a couple caveats there, mm-hmm. just to
so let's talk about the warnings. Yeah,
add on to that. Mm-hmm. It's not always completely tax free because if there's any growth in that account,
that
growth comes out as a taxable distribution. Although it's probably
no penalty on that.
Right, no penalty.
Because you're converting it. So yes, that is more. I'm glad you pointed that out, Justin. Mm-hmm. I'm always envisioning people doing the conversion so quickly that there's really not time for growth in there. But it can happen even if it's in there for a day.
Sure.
There can be a little bit of something going on in there. So,
and oftentimes in practice, you see people that will contribute, the maximum or what they can on a monthly basis, and then every year or two do the conversion mm-hmm. when it makes sense.
Right.
And that's when you could see that those growth factors happen.
So that part's true.
Yeah.
The other thing I alluded to in the past segment was this only works cleanly and well
mm-hmm.
if the traditional IRA into which you're putting your non-deductible contribution is empty before you do it.
Not the
actually doesn't have to be empty, but it should have nothing but basis in it.
Mm.
So it should have nothing but non-deductible contributions in it. If it has deductible contributions sitting in there as well, you have this pro rata thing I mentioned before to deal with. And when money leaves, it always comes out pro rata, whether it's a regular distribution to put in your pocket or a conversion to the Roth, which in all honesty, as it leaves the traditional IRA, it's considered a distribution of sorts.
Would you say that if you have a traditional IRA and you really want to start making Roth contributions, mm-hmm. but you can't, maybe the first step, rather than doing backdoor contributions, is to try and convert all of your IRA.
So there's a couple of options.
Okay.
There. And that is certainly if you're kind of your long-term goal is to start getting money into a Roth, remember another way instead of contributions, you can get money in with conversions. So maybe that money that you are going to use to contribute instead use that money to pay the taxes on a Roth conversion of your existing traditional IRA. Mm-hmm. And you can do it in stages. Remember, you don't have to do a conversion all or nothing. So if you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in your traditional IRA, you may obviously not want to convert all of that in one year for a tax reason. But you could do it a little bit at a time. And then once it's empty, then deploy the back door if it exists at that time. Who knows if it will. But that's only one option. There's actually another creative option. And that would be sometimes you work for an employer who has a 401k, a 401k into which they will allow you to roll IRAs.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, you could have your traditional IRA. You then start working for an employer. Maybe you already work for them. And you've decided you want to get money in the Roth. But you know that it's the back door doesn't work because it's going to be cluttered up by this pro rata rule. Well, find out if your employer will allow you to roll your traditional IRA into the 401k. If they will, you do that, and now you're sitting on an open, empty, clean IRA through which you can do a nice, clean backdoor Roth conversion.
Very slick.
Or Roth contribution. Very slick, yeah. So that's another method you can do. Not all 401ks allow you to do that.
Yeah, not all 401ks are where you want to put a big portion of your investments too. So
it depends on your situation. Yeah. That's just I just throwing it out there as another option, because if you're have things you're as in interested in investing in the 401k compared to the IRA, and this might be a perfect way to go. There might be very compelling reasons not to do it this way. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there's, I guess, the moral of the story, quite a number of ways to get money into a Roth, even if it appears that you make too much money to be putting money into a Roth.
There sure are.
So currently, there's noises that'll go away. But for now, so as of February 14th, 2017, when we're recording this, those are the rules. Speaking of this is February 14th. It's Valentine's Day today.
Yes, the day we're recording. Yeah.
Jim assumed you had plans. Do you have some nice plans for Valentine's Day? You have kids now, so.
Yes, I do have kids. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I usually poo-poo on Valentine's Day because I'm a cold-hearted fool. But my wife has warmed me up to it over the years.
Really?
Maybe through the pain and suffering that I usually incur on the 15th, 16th, and 17th.
Usually the poo-poo comes later because during the whole courting, dating phase, that's just, when you definitely want to do the... You didn't even do it then? You poo-pooed it then?
I've never...
And she still put up with you?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I mean,
you must have had an ace in the hole somewhere.
Yeah.
Something.
Uh-huh. So, but, you know, as time went on, she's very big into such holidays, if you want to call it that. And I've warmed up to it a bit. And we're going to... I got my sister to watch the kids tonight. Mm. Yeah. And we're going to go out. We're going to have dinner and enjoy a relaxing evening.
Nice. Yeah. Without kids.
Without kids. And I actually even got her a little gift basket that I left in her car this morning, which she called, and I didn't answer because I was busy with the kids. And then she texts and says, "Did you leave a gift basket in my car?" And I kind of let her on saying, it wasn't me. And she really had to do some investigative work because she really believed that I couldn't possibly leave a gift for her in the morning.
I was going to say, that's pretty concerning when she thinks it might actually be someone else. Right, Justin?
That's right.
I'm not sure what that says about the state of things. But, you know, now, how long have you been married?
We've been married 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been, I've been married 24 years. 11 to my current wife, so I have a little more practice than you. Yeah. But at year 11, things have changed a little bit where I left something on the seat of my wife's car this morning as well. One of those nice big heart chocolate boxes, which are, you know, how much more traditional can you get than the big Russell Stover heart
and
box?
Yeah, a dozen roses, maybe.
And well, that's later.
Oh!
Good thing I spread it out,
pre-recorded.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's sitting on her. So she calls me, And she says the same thing. Did you leave this box of chocolate on my car? And I'm thinking,
obviously.
Yeah. Yes, I did. And she says, a little pause, a little silence there. And she says, you know, I hate these chocolates. I can't believe that I didn't remember. That I didn't remember that she didn't like those. Nothing against Russell Stovers. So this is not anti-Russell Stovers. This is anti-chocolate with stuff inside of it, apparently. She doesn't like the stuff inside. So
you're going to have to get some new
chocolate. So I got some alternative. Luckily, this afternoon, I still had time. I got some alternative chocolates that will pass the test. And the roses and the card and that sort of thing. But I had, I believe it or not, I actually added to my Google Calendar February 10th or so for it to remind me, don't get the heart-shaped box of chocolates because it's not going to go over well. So Brilliant. The point is, at 11 years, they have no trouble apparently telling you that they hate the gift.
Right. You should know her better by then. You should know her better.
So I'm old enough now I can start to, you know, feign memory problems. And I said, oh, I misinterpreted. I thought you didn't like just the coconut ones or something, and you were just going to like the rest of them. And it's no, it's apparently I hate all of them except the occasional one with caramel in it. But that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. So we're going to give those to the kids, and I'm going to give her some. There's actually some really nice boutique chocolatier here in Fort Collins that brings in cocoa beans and does the whole process locally.
Oh,
here.
No way.
Yeah, down in Old Town.
I didn't know that.
And they make some glorious chocolate. Mm. And it's almost like wine tasting because you can try all this chocolate from different parts of the world. They bring in cocoa beans from all over the world. So you can try and taste the differences in all these chocolates. It's actually
maybe sweet, that'll be my date tonight.
So that's where I'm going with the backup plan after the heart full of chocolates didn't work. So, Justin, thanks for joining us. We are The Music Means. We're here at the end of our show.
Thanks for having me.
If anybody has any questions on doing Roth conversions, backdoor Roth contributions, dealing with your Form 8606, we've gotten really good at these 8606s.
Yes,
easily messed up, can be corrected, definitely should be used whenever you're dealing with non-deductible contributions to an IRA. And next week, I have no idea what we're going to talk about. Hopefully, somebody from West Virginia will email us because we're still waiting to put that star.
I saw an interesting post on Facebook about West Virginia. I'll have to share it with you off the air.
Okay. So we'll join you next week on another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.